Welcome to Ghostbusters, the radio show that talks about strange things in the neighborhood and weird stuff that don't look good. Talk about stuff that's messing with your head and crazy stuff that's happening in the bed. Why? Because many church folks are falling in the darkness. And the Bible calls us to walk as children of light. The Bible says, see then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to Ghostbusters, the radio show that talks about strange things in the neighborhood and weird stuff that don't look good. All this month, ladies and gentlemen, we are celebrating Black History Month. If you're hearing this tape for the first time, we are playing this during Black History Month. And I wanted to go back. Particularly this week, and I wanted us to revisit how it used to be down in the South, down in the Deep South, how it used to be down in Mississippi, segregated Mississippi, because see, a lot of our young people today, they don't know about that part of civil rights. The only thing they really know about civil rights, a lot of them, is Martin Luther King gave a I Have a Dream speech in August of 1963. But they really don't know what he was fighting for and a lot of that. And so I wanted to visit in Greenwood, Mississippi. That's the heart of the Delta. That's right up there in the Delta country. Greenwood, Mississippi, and how it used to be back in the 1960s. So get close to your radio and listen.
Colored-only restaurants, hotels, and water fountains. Segregated schools, hospitals, and fraternal organizations. This was the Jim Crow South of the 1950s and early 1960s until the Civil Rights Movement finally forced a change. Black children in department stores were not allowed to try on new shoes. Salesmen often traced the edges of their old shoes onto pieces of butcher paper and fetched an approximate fit from inventory. Dallas County in Alabama, where Selma is the county seat, had only 300 black registered voters out of a pool of 15,000. African Americans attempting to sign up at the registrar's office could lose their jobs or even be thrown into jail. Special literacy tests were administered to would-be black voters. One popular question was, how many bubbles are in a bar of soap? Greenwood, Mississippi was a tinderbox during the civil rights movement in the early 1960s. Hundreds were arrested during nonviolent protests, and many civil rights activists were beaten.
June Johnson deposition. United States District Court for Southern District of Mississippi, Jackson Division. Civil action number 3599. June Johnson, being duly sworn, deposes and says, I am 16 years old and live in Greenwood, Mississippi. A group of civil rights workers was traveling from Charleston, South Carolina to Greenwood, Mississippi by bus on June 9th, 1963. Our group sat in the front of the bus. When we got to Winona, the bus stopped at the terminal there. When we got inside the terminal, our group sat down on the white side. The Winona chief of police came in and told us to get over where you belong. We got up and went outside the terminal. Soon the chief of police and a state trooper came outside and arrested us. The trooper took us to the Montgomery County Jail. He said, what you niggas come down here for, a damn demonstration? We all shook our heads and answered no. Then he said, you damn niggas don't say no to me, you say yes, sir. He asked me, are you a member of the NAACP? I said, yes. Then he hit me on the cheek and chin. I raised my arm to protect my face and he hit me in the stomach. He asked, who runs that thing? I answered, the people. He asked, who pays you? I said, nobody. He said, nigger, you lying. You done enough already to get your neck broken. Then the four of them threw me on the floor and beat me. After they finished stomping me, they said, get up, nigger. I raised my head and the white man hit me on the back of the head with a club wrapped in black leather. Then they made me get up. My dress was torn off and my slip was coming off. Blood was streaming down the back of my head and my dress was all bloody. We stayed in that jail day and night from Sunday till Tuesday when they booked us and informed us that we were charged with disorderly conduct and resisting arrest. We then went back to jail until Wednesday afternoon when a group of SNCC people came from Greenwood to get us out of jail. We got back to Greenwood about 7 p.m. on June 12, 1963, sworn to and signed this 28th day of July, 1964.
In 19 Civil Rights Timeline, Brown versus the Board of Education. Norman Smith registered to vote
most
in 1960.
Parents in those days didn't encourage her to go and vote. You mostly on your own. So I took it upon my own to come and register to vote. I was over 18 then. I was about 20. I think I was 29. But I didn't understand the repercussion behind that. And so when I went out to vote, she asked me, what you doing here? What can I do? I said, I can't register to vote. What? You know, like that, trying to intimidate me. So I said, I came to register to vote. The white people came in behind me. She would drop me and go register them. Then come back to me. And then when she asked me these questions about the Constitution, what you call a test they gave you, how long does it take a rabbit to ride, run in New York, a hot bubble of the bar of soap? How long does it take a boy to fly me the money? Those have a silly question they'll ask you. That can disqualify you. She let me go that time, but many people before me didn't pass it, and they just gave up. But I just stuck with her because I guess I'm much older than I was. I probably would have left too about 18 years old.
In 1955, civil rights, a year-long bus boycott in Montgomery, Alabama, led to a Supreme Court ruling outlawing bus discrimination. Theodore Johnson, Jr. gave his testimony.
I was, like when Emmett Till got killed, I was 10 years old. And so I was kind of sheltered by my parents. It was just my mom and boy staying in the house, and boy, don't you do no whistling at all. So I wasn't allowed to do no whistling. And in the 60s, when the civil rights movement first began, I was kind of sheltered. But then as I got sophomore year in high school, I got a chance to meet Sam Block, Stokely Carmichael, Bob Moses, and that's when I started, became active in the civil rights movement. Just knocked on doors to get people to register, older people to register, and just go to mass meetings and meet different people and just, you know, really just get a good concept of interacting with other people from other places, really.
In 1954, Emmett Till, 14, is murdered in Mississippi. The mutilated body is returned to a native Chicago for burial. Two white men are arrested and acquitted. David Jordan.
We were freshmen at Mississippi Valley State College at that time, and we were asked to give a report, a newspaper report, to the trial. We went to headed for Sumner, which was 32 miles north of Greenwood. And we arrived there. We sat behind the whole crowd. They had on the stand at that time the funeral home director of the Central Funeral Home here in Greenwood, who had picked up Emmett Till's body. And they were cross-examining Mr. Miller about his picking up the body and how did he know it was Emmett Till. Because what was being said in Mississippi that Emmett Till had been seen walking around in Chicago and that this just was a plot for the NAACP to increase his membership. But there were a ring on Emmett Till's finger
that the mortician observed, and they talked about that ring, and they looked at that ring, and it had a niche in there. That's what cleared up the identification of the body. But the cross-examiner, Mr. Miller, was a very dignified man. He was one of the leaders here in the city of Greenwood. And when you looked at how he was scared to death, because actually it was just like somebody would take a pail of water and pour it down on his head and it run all over his clothes. He was wringing wet, and he was trying to say yes, sir, to this person. Cross-examining, he was saying yes, sir, here, yes, sir, there. I, from my point of view, I thought it was a mockery of justice. And the next day we gave our report to the class. Next day or so, the trial was over. These two were acquitted. And the sheriff, Strider, said to the nation, I guess the Chicago niggas and the NAACP is satisfied now. We never have any trouble with our niggas until they go to Chicago. Then they come back and we have trouble out of them.
1957, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference is organized in Atlanta, the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. Norman Smith,
the Ku Klux Klan. I personally never had no contact with them, but I read, saw how they did other people. And if you do anything that they thought you crossed the line with, you'd be hearing from them. That Mr. West was a black that didn't fight from anyone. When they brought that cross in front of the service station, he told the chief of police, I'm not going to take it. They might kill me, but I'm going to kill some of them. They come out here again, bring the cross from my place again. They never bothered Mr. West after that.
1957, black students desegregate Central High School in Little Rock, Arkansas. Theodore Johnson on marching for the right to vote.
Marching down Magdalen Street is a block away. And the lady had a store, which is the church parking lot now. She stepped out of her store and shot in the crowd with a sawed-off shotgun, had pinto beans and salt. And like it's rough, had some hot pinto beans and salt to hit you and stick on. You know, we was picking the courthouse because that's where you went to register to vote. And you know, like we was marching that day, and like, you know, different folks had different, like, I want to vote, let my mother vote. So they just came out with the monkey and put the monkey on the line with a sign that said, I want to vote. It was the young people had to actually do the work and go home and let your mom and your father knew what was going on. Because if they got involved, they lost their job. So basically it was a young movement. I voted in 1964, still between two FBIs, right after Johnson had passed the Voter Rights Act. 1964, that's when I registered.
1960, black students staged a sit-in in Woolworth, Lunch County, in Greensboro, North Carolina, after they refused service. David Jordan, the power of protest.
Well, we shut this town down practically for 6 months. I was heading at that time, this was in 68, I was had organized after civil rights, Bill passed, I organized what is called the Greenwood Voters League, which I'm still in the president for 47 years. And I was part of the group that sued, because we were leading boycotts downtown. After Dr. King assassination, oh, there was a couple of stores burned. The stores in our neighborhood was burned, one in Baptist Town. But blacks decided that we would not go downtown to buy anything. Remember, I was a young teacher at this time, and after school every evening, teacher would form a picket line downtown. And on Saturdays, we'd form picket lines all day. And that went on for 6 months. There was agreement made that the boycott were lifted if they hired an African-American policeman. And the city reluctantly, after we got rid of the mayor, Charles Sampson, a new mayor, came in. He hired the first African-American black policeman. So we were, that was a milestone in those days. We had a policeman, a black on the police force. You can imagine how important that were to us. So my organization following in with the Voters League with growing strength, I pushed through and we started getting a fireman. I got on the sheriff's department, they started hiring a black deputy, meter readers, so we're moving in that direction. So that boycott actually opened up in 68. However, there were other times I had to have boycott with my organization, the Voters League, on trying to get blacks working in stores as cashiers. We boycotted them for 6 months to get blacks as cashiers in there. And they finally, after 6 months, then 6 or 7 months, then they decided they would hire one black cashier. Before then, we had no blacks as cashiers.
1961, the Freedom Ride began to protest segregation in interstate travel. White bus riders attempted to use colored-only facilities at bus stations in the South. Norman Smith, segregated in baseball.
I consider myself a good third baseman. And when I read in the paper that Buddy Lewis for the St. Louis Cardinals was having a trial camp here in Greenwood at Legion Field on Carlton Avenue, so Mr. Traeger heard about it too. And as a result of that, he said, I'm going to take you and two more boys out and let you all try out. So when we got out to the Legion Field and we saw these white boys standing around getting ready to be scouted, and Brother Lewis asked Mr. Treadgill, he said, what do y'all want? He said, I brought these boys out to try out for baseball. He said, Fess, I'm going to tell you this here. They can't try out. I said, why? Because Mississippi has a law that states that no blacks, whites can participate on the playing field at the same time in this state. And we couldn't try out. He didn't let us try out. But we never got that chance again. And nowadays, you can try it anywhere you want to go. But you're talking about 54 years ago. And that's what happened to us.
1962, thousands of federal troops are sent to the University of Mississippi to stem riots and to allow the man to come into Mississippi.
I wasn't scared.
University.
But you stayed mad a long time, though. Stayed mad a real long time. You know, matter of fact, maybe something like in my middle 30s is when I began. Once I had traveled, been other places, had gone to school, and like the guys in Berkeley, California, Bill Sketch on them, like they gave me a scholarship to Tougaloo College. And that's when I began to, okay, I go to California. Then I come back, I meet some people in from New York, Tony Ardell, you know, and they gave me, you know, money to, you know, to get me through school. And that's, you know, that's when my education opened up, that all white folks wasn't crazy and all white folks wasn't stupid, and there were some decent people in the world.
1963, a march on Washington, D.C. draws an estimated 200,000 people to the Lincoln Memorial in a push for civil rights. Norman Smith marching with Martin Luther King Jr.
Well, Dr. King was here. I was in summer school that summer, and he was coming from Memphis to Ben Jackson. So I picked him up in outside of Greenwood. Then went on through the other city on into Jackson. I was testing my stamina to see could I take that hot sun and make the march without falling out. And really not having anything to eat and then no water hardly to drink. Just testing my willpower. And you're looking at about 30,000 people marching with him then. But every time we get into a town, we're going through a town on the highway, we might step on some white people's grass, and they raise more hell than you want to see. They would give us some, the maids want to bring us some water out to give us to, and knock that water out of their hand to keep them giving us water, hoping that we have some kind of problem en route to Jackson.
1963, four little black children are killed in a church bombing in Birmingham, Alabama. They was attending Sunday school. David Jordan, sharecropper, sees their
Greenwood
rights to vote.
Is a curious city. It's a town that was the head of the Delta, one of the leading towns in the Delta. We're at the Jason of the Hills. And the civil rights movement was blacks wanted to register to vote because in 1962, blacks almost starved to death. And we made bumper crops. The blacks did not benefit any because automation had come. They had gotten cotton pickers. So as a result, the people on the plantation owners didn't have any need for the sharecroppers or the people who picked cotton on the plantation. So he asked them to move. They were asked to move in many instances, and they moved to Greenwood, and they demolished the homes a minute after they left. So it was a tough winter, and people almost starved to death. And then SNCC came in, Student Nonviolent Coordinated Committee, was trying to register people and told them the only way they're going to better their condition, they had to become registered to vote. So you had ordinary people begin to do extraordinary things, people who were scared to death, but they were willing to take a chance on walking downtown to try to get registered to vote. And they got downtown near the mayor's office in the police station, and they turned dogs to loose on them and started biting them for trying to register to vote. They were being led by a Methodist preacher named Reverend Tucker, and the dogs bit Reverend Tucker. He was this man short in stature and knocked him down and biting them two dogs. And then he hollered, "Oh, Jesus," he's calling on the Lord. And one of the police, and he's deceased now, said, "You black SOB, Kennedy is your God." The NBC, ABC, all of them came in when they saw this. And then that's where the movement started. The bottom line is Greenwood, Mississippi, were the first place dog was used on individuals who were trying to register to vote.
1964, three civil rights workers were murdered by the Ku Klux Klan near Philadelphia, Mississippi. Their bodies was discovered and buried in a dam. Norman Smith talks about that.
Walkout was extremely affected. We ran a lot of business, people out of business, because they depended upon our involvement with them. But we wanted blacks to be in position to sell and sometimes to be a cash register and just other men, just a handyman, a handy woman. We wanted blacks to be in the upper echelon position. And that boycott stemmed it. We saved boycott about almost 6-7 months. And then finally, they gave in, some of them did, and they hired a few blacks. Then the next year was 69. I guess it was a carryover. They hired the first black police officer. Then in November of 69, they had another black. So we had two blacks and the rest was white. 2 years later, they had an election here for the county. The county and the city had a separate election. And the sheriff who became, the man who became sheriff, Rufus Freeman, told everybody, blacks and white, when he spoke to a black audience, he told the same thing he said to the white audience. He said, "Ask me you have a black sheriff, the deputy." He said, "Yes, I will, time has come." When he won, the man who he defeated, they had a confrontation. He didn't have much schooling, but he just had it because he could beat Negroes. That was his reputation. And as a result of that, when he lost, he just couldn't take it anymore. He'd been in it so long, and he lost his power, and he lost his position. He felt defeated. And he and the sheriff who won, they got into it. But that sheriff who won whipped him real good with his disc. And then he kept his word. He had the first black deputy in 1971.
1964, Civil Rights Act is signed into law. It banned discrimination in the use of most public facilities. Theodore Johnson Jr. talks about the Ku Klux Klan.
The police were the Klan. You know, yeah, so we had it every day. Police were police, and you respected the law, and you could bend the rules and try not to break them. You know, but other than that, that was the law, you know.
1965, on Bloody Sunday, demonstrators are beaten back from the Purtis Bridge in Selma, Alabama. 50 men and women are hospitalized after the police has used clubs to beat them. Norman Smith talks about that.
She was a waitress, and this, you always had busboys. He clean up, mop the floor, keep it clean. And he accidentally splashed some water on this white waitress leg. He wasn't trying to do it, he was banging the bubble, splashing from the mop on her legs. And he went down to wipe it out and he was shot. And he subsequently died. And then when integration really came with public accommodation, most of the white places, eating places, had what you call a punch card, a key card. Yet they gave them to certain people they gave them to, most of customer they gave them to. And when they come there, they didn't have to open the door, but they put that card in the door, open for them. But if you was black, you didn't have a card. Now, if you was a black that worked there, you come through the back door. That was always open for you. Some blacks could go in the front, but they were blacks that they were well known, like a black we might consider a black that catered to their whims. And they thought he wasn't a threat to them, they let him in. But he couldn't sit down and just get the food and take it out. And some people still have that syndrome today. And they still, even on a Greyhound bus, you were taught so long and so many years to go to the back of the bus. The front seat could be wide, but they still would go to the back. But as the younger people came along and they had more exposure to white people, things changed. They would sit anywhere. But in my generation, and on people older than me, that's where they were trained. You always go to the back of the bus. I don't care how many seats are front of empty, you see it go to the back.
1967, Thurgood Marshall becomes the first black justice on the Supreme Court. David Jordan, rising above anger.
Growing up the son of a sharecropper, it was, I've seen blacks kicked and beaten before their families. I've seen so much, and it was difficult. I was angry. I swore that I was going to get even. That's why I didn't leave and go north like my brothers did. I decided I'd stay here because I wanted to get even with white folks for what I had seen them do to other blacks and what they had done to me as a young boy working at a store. And that stayed with me, those two incidents where I saw them kick a black man down to the ground and his wife and the two children asking them, don't kill that daddy. They had bought their grocery and the white man went in the store and asked the other white man to let him have a gun to kill this black son of a bitch. This black lady and the children was running with him trying to get him out of harm's way. And they dropped their groceries all across the field running. They didn't run in the road, they ran across the field. They're dropping their grocery and they was hollering, they're trying to run with him. And the beating that I got in the face for not being able to say, yes, sir, the way they wanted me to say it. And I was in high school, about ninth grade, I think it was. And they called me a smart N because I was working in a store in the country. And at that time, blacks didn't go to school beyond eighth grade. But here I was ninth and I was in high school and was still learning. And they always resented that. As I became more educated and older with a family and a religious person, I changed. And instead of hating now, I feel sorry for those who still have that mindset. And I learned to forgive and forget.
1968, Reverend Martin Luther King is assassinated in Memphis, Tennessee. All right, well, that's it, ladies and gentlemen. on the segregated South, particularly there in Greenwood, Mississippi. All right, that's it for today. Thank you so kindly for joining us. Listen to us all day long, because we're in your corner right here on Ghostbusters.